certain drugs that, I mean, if people are investing in you and you are whittling yourself away, injecting.
Another one got caught today. It's all over the papers. Teenager arrested in computer crime scandal. Hacker arrested after bank tampering. Damn kids. They're all alive. But the deal winner of 3D psychology in 1950s techno game ever take a look behind the eyes of the hacker? Did you ever wonder what made him tick? What forces shaped him? What may have molded him? I am a hacker. Enter my world. Mine is a world that begins with school. I'm smarter than most of the other kids. This crap they teach us bores me. Damn them, Retriever. They're all alike. I'm in junior high or high school. I've listened to teachers explain for the 15th time how to reduce a fraction. I understand it. No, Miss Smith, I didn't show my work. I did it in my head. Damn kid. Probably competent. They're all alike. I made a discovery today. I found a computer. Wait a second. This is cool. It does what I want it to. If it makes a mistake, it's because I screwed it up. Not because it doesn't like me or feels threatened by me or thinks I'm a smartass or doesn't like teaching and shouldn't be here. Damn kid. All we did is play games. They're all alike. Then it happened. Door opened to a world. Rushing through the phone line like a heroine. Through an epic spins. An electronic pulse is sent out. A refuge from the day-to-day incompetence is sought. Word is found. This is it. This is where I belong. I know everyone here. Even if I've never met them, never talked to them, I never hear from them again. I know you all.
On this computer, I rule. This is the first and last episode I did. This is a rewrite. Basically, because my first episode became my number two. And so, this one, by this computer, I rule. Recapping the last two episodes. Safe to say, I gave a nice story on how I took over the ISP. And the last one is how much of that ISP was me working for that criminal. A criminal named Marty Mizrahi. He's technically, if you really look into it, he's more like a narcissistic style cult leader. Probably the nicest way to put it. But anyways, moving forward. Oh, I did write a book. The book really, really covers a lot of my life being here in Vegas, LasVegas.net or LV.net was part of it. And all that stuff. So, nothing about that. Cancer battle, massive marriage, and more career stuff. And who actually inspired me for this? Most of the book was basically my mom. Me coming to terms about how Marty was never my friend. I mean, friends don't treat people like that, you know. Friends don't talk you down, they actually help you up. Because friends, they have your back when you have their back. Marty never really had my back, especially when he promised me things and he never delivered. And I would deliver all the time, and I got nothing for it. And I spent a decade of that crap for nothing. So, technically, a freaking decade. That's 10 years of my life, you know. And I'm gonna look back on that now. I'm 40 as I'm recording this. That was my 20s to 30s. Freaking technically working for him, I flushed my whole life down the toilet. He was never really there to help me. He was there to criticize me, put me down, made me feel worse than a human being. That's the inspiration. That's why I'm here. This is why I'm making this. This is going to be the last one to this series, and then I'm moving on to my Slack series, which is going to be episode 4 to, I think, probably episode 4 to 10, depending on how long that goes. Now, that is going to be digging into everything I've learned with Slackware. I'm going to reteach it back to everyone else, starting from how I started with it, how I loved it, and how I use it basically on every other computer that I don't have to use Windows with. My server, it's my networking, it's my everyday kind of daily driver. All right, move on to the next one, shall we? Oh yeah, I just explained the whole rewrite process, because I did number one, two, and that ended up being 2 to 3, because, you know, the first one is like the person who hacked the internet, and the second one was basically working for the criminal. This is the by this computer I rule. So, all right, next one, the comic, the pirate, the hacker. Basically, that's how I've started out here. I know I have to keep hitting my tabs here. Part two, how I wrote it all down was like this. The comic has started. The comic. It started out as me writing a book, a comic book in high school, you know, that inspired me to writing. All this stuff's putting me together. I started a comic book, and I started a D&D campaign, and had a few friends, you know, that actually I got into playing it with me at the time. You know, I was trying to really hone it down. Let's see. And then I wanted to jump into game development because I was deciding, you know, I'm making this custom D&D campaigns. I don't want to just make my own video game. Because I love video gaming. You know, freaking... playing a lot of Super Nintendo games, N64 came out, PlayStation 1 came out, you have all these 3D games, games like Cheeto Blade and Final Fantasy 7 that just came out. I want to make my own action RPG and make it epic, you know? And that's where I go that route. I want to double what they call the network. For PlayStation 1. Back then it was like the development kit just for PlayStation 1 games. I was like really into that. I was getting really into C++ programming. I was trying to get into video game design and programming. And because, you know, stuff that I wanted to learn cost money. That is something I didn't have. I was trying to go to a little bit of college for it, but it didn't happen. Kind of did, and then I ran out of money for that. And I couldn't get a job right away to pay for the schooling and whatnot. So I ended up learning what piracy, internet piracy, and I became a pirate. And because of the piracy stuff is why, you know, a lot of things that actually unfolded right there. It was like, being that pirate, I was able to not only able to get the software that I was looking for and try to do, it led me down another path. And that was the life of the hacker, you know? The stuff that I wrote in the book. I'm gonna try to dig deep into this one. Try to dig deep in a couple of exploits that I had, and how I obtained them, and how they were not a public thing until later on. I mean, piracy and the hacking became one on one. And the hacking unleashed. Part 3, hacking unleashed, so it led me down there. I mean, you read the books like Mitnick's Art of Deception or Art of Intrusion books, there's stories in there that didn't list about 3 and 4 of those stories out of each book. That I knew those people on the other hand of those stories. You know, their handles like really popped out because I'm like, whoa. And of course, I had 3 books in front of me. I didn't fully take that full list down, but you know, if you read it and you look at the times that it all happened, and a lot of those names will actually drop here and there. And I knew those people. It's like, that's what blows my mind, is like, wow, out of all people, Kevin Mitnick, who lives in the friggin' same town as I do, Las Vegas, and at the time, I was like, has written these books, and they have these stories in there, and these stories, they're like, every time I read them, it's like I'm reading back in my past. And this is like what I'm trying to put down as part of my past, part of that story. So I guess that's more of another, I'm kind of in, like, inspired in a way. Go to the first one. All right, so it was just like back in 99, 2000. The first freaking Qualcomm QPopper POP3, a remote Buffalo overload exploit. Before it got published on BugTrack and stuff like that, or an actual POC, It was actually back in those days. It was more like somebody found a way in. They wouldn't give it out to everyone right away. They shared it amongst their peers, and those peers would be whoever that little group is, or that IRC channel, or friends of friends kind of thing. And because my piracy led down to a path of I'm having a little bit of fun, basically DDoSing people back in 99, 2000, it was like, I ran across this one, and this would open up a whole new level of hacking for me. I mean, it's a remote exploit, it dropped jail for me, and I was able to write things around it, I was able to reprogram it, I was able to insert that into, like, bot code, where I can actually, drop the shell, hide the shell, and create account, create a dropper for an IRC bot and create like a whole network from it. This is what opened the whole thing. So like it was really hard to get like 0 days. That's what they called them, 0 days. And used to have been not so critical. Well, it was critical. What I mean is it used to not be so publicly available right away. If somebody would have found a POC on something, a lot of times it would not get displayed until like maybe a year later, sometimes 6 months later. I was sitting on this exploit for at least 6 months to maybe a year, and before it actually got publicly released on the bug tracks and stuff like that, then I didn't really have a whole lot of places where were able to find their exploit and share them amongst people and earn money. Now you can find these exploits and earn money. So I got creative and I made bots, and I targeted like places like Koreans, Argentina, Brazil, places like that, anything back then when I was able to top level domain scan. Was able to, started really scanning. I was doing high-level scans just to find these places, because my ethics then was keep it off the United States shores area, keep it elsewhere. Because I didn't want to get in trouble. I still think to this day, if I would have gotten in trouble, maybe I would have got famous too, like everyone else. That's me thinking. But this was the invulnerability that I also used on LV.NET. Now, just like I said in the book, it's basically LV.NET. Las Vegas.NET didn't pop on my radar until I got into a hacker war with some people on IRC. One by the name of Skrilla. His name was Ruben Candelario. He just like a couple years ago, he was just in the news again for being a child porn peddler or something. I don't know. But he got busted back then because he tried hacking NASA. But just one day he came popping in on IRC with the host. I'm like, hold on, give me 5 minutes. I got right on in because he didn't patch the cube hopper problem. He might have got in elsewhere, but I still got in and I still did my things inside the LVNet and did my thing and moved on. But because of that, I was able to, because of that, my first exploit right there, my first remote exploit. And let's see. If I can just open this up real quick and real quick. Okay, as a seclist or the security vulnerability in Cube Hopper 2.53. Develop and learn via security, blah, blah, blah. The exploit details involve sending a special constructed message to a user, then logging in as that user. Using an EUIL command. And successfully attack can yield a remote shell, like bin bash, bin shell, running group, mail. But because this is Red Hat 6.0, mail is also a root user. And remember that. And it requires the ability to log in as a user. You can actually remote in as a user. You can put yourself in root. You can shell. You can modify the UID and GUID of mail. Probably another way of doing it. And of course, it's all logged, but you know, if you're going in there, you can unlog yourself. So yeah, you can delete those entries, no problem. The current release version is 3.02 at the time, which recommended that they upgraded to that. But this came out of the box with 6.0, with Qualcomm, QPopper. That's how it rolled. And there's this huge exploit. All their little exploit code. But basically, you're passing, you send a command through the mail of Pop3 on the Pop3 protocol. Sending that, what was it, EUIL command, and on top of that you're throwing like a shell code in between it. That shell code tells it to return a shell, and then you get your remote shell. And it didn't work in a lot of systems, but the best one was Red Hat. And that was the fun part about it. And Egg Drop was like a Linux Tickle PCL PK ripbot written that you could actually run from the command line and set up and write scripts and insert scripts and do some fancy stuff with that. And you can botnet those too, have its own little botnet network. But I also have, because I was kind of lazy, I didn't want to always telnet and stuff, sage into it back then. So I'd actually have them join a special IRC channel. And the fun began from there. But because of scripting and everything else, I actually got into MIRC scripting for Windows. And that's when, like, if you can find it, I can't find it anymore. There's like my released MIRC script called Calbot. Calbot 1.0, and I think on CD I might have 2.0 somewhere. If I can ever read this piece again. Let's see. So that's my the Qualcomm QPopper Pop3 exploit. That was my first. That was a fun one. It was my first. I learned a lot from it. Amazing. Then the next one dropped, which was the SSH nuke. Zeroed it. Basically, if you watch The Matrix Part 2, you would understand that they use SSH nuke. An actual exploit at the time, which pretty much sends another remote shell. Let's see if I can bring up security focus. This is an archive one. Okay, this is the archive. SSH CRC32 conversation attack detector vulnerability. Let's see if I can get that full details. Nope. discussion, maybe? Exploit. Alright, here we go. Discussion, a secure shell, an encrypted remote access protocol, SSH, or the code base for SSH. How many systems are all over the world? Priorities. An integer overflow bug in the CRC32 compensation attack detection code may allow remote attackers to write the values to our arbitrary locations in the memory. This would occur when situations where large SSH packets are received by either client or server and 32-bit representation. Of the SSH packet length is assigned to 16-bit integer. Difference in the data representation, wrapping, whatever. Any situations will cause the 16-bit variable to be assigned to 0 or a really low value. As a result, feature calls malloc as well as an index use reference locations in memory. Can be corrupted by the attacker. This would occur in the manner that the exploited can write numerical values to almost arbitrary locations in the memory. So basically, what can happen is they can send the calls and whatever over SSH, a long packet being 16-bit, it looks like it can, they try to represent it as a 32-bit, but it's actually 16, and they corrupt the data, and because of that, you can actually drop something within that memory to where it drops an SSH shell, and normally that's always root. Hopefully that explains a little more. So that one was a second big one. What I've done with this one was got more hosts. I didn't do anything on LV.NET at the time because I was starting to work with them already. So I was still skimming around for different hosts and whatnot, but this one came in as a really weird one because when the person actually found it, they compiled it as an ELF binary. It was kind of weird getting something a 0-day like that, but they were really trying to lock it down because they're tired of people grabbing it and reselling it to companies and trying to ruin the whole 0-day remote execution stuff. Basically, without letting everybody know, hey, we found the exploit, and instead of sharing it with everybody, they were trying to keep it silent. Kind of unethical. That's how a lot of things went back then. Back then, it was like 99, 2000, kind of like an all-out war kind of thing. And like, you got people trying to find 0-days so they can make their own little botnets and distribute DDoS systems and ready to take down each other. Find whatever they can find go from there. But it was a fun old day. It was definitely one of my memorable ones, you know. Every time I look at a Matrix Reloaded and I look at that exploit right there, I'm like, I remember using that. I was there when it dropped before it even became public. Before it ever became public. And it's like funny how things like that, you know, I get things before they go public kind of things. I miss those kind of days. But it's like, yeah, like stuff like that goes public. World of Warcraft, I was a part of the server that ended up being the whole pandemic thing. Freaking when Zul'Gurub came out and our freaking team decided to, you know, our freaking raid group was all together. They're actually doing it. And what happened was the hunters in the team, we were all like getting them to say, call your pets away as soon as they get infected. We're going to use them later. And they all did it. So, and of course, we all, later on, we all went to freaking the Horde capital city and we started unleashing our freaking pets everywhere and watching basically the server just freaking crash after that because it was just an endless pandemic going. Everyone would be like dying so quickly. Every NPC dying because of the freaking infection. It was insane. But yeah, that was like a. It's like stuff like that, you know, stuff you know you find, you don't tell anybody, but then somebody ends up telling somebody, so. Yeah, this day and age, when I find something, I ethically report it, so I've learned lots from all that. Especially since nowadays you can get paid for doing that, so. I think because of this time, back then, it's what it inspires places like HackerOne and stuff like that to do, you know, bug bounties. Instead of bug bounties being underground, and well, they still do exist, but probably a lot more darker than it used to be. I never really looked into it, but think about it deep. You know, back then, this was all fun and games. Nowadays, like, it's more of a rush between good versus evil. You know, you got people this already looking for that so they can do harm on people. While you have the other people trying to make money, you're also preventing people from that doing stuff like that. So this became a huge different thing than it used to be. To some people, it still is probably fun and games, but in the end, it's not. So our next slide, the end of the exploit. Basically, I'm like going ahead of my own slide here. Let's see what happens when I keep going on a tangent. But at the end of okay, let's go on the end of that. Here's another part of that. Till the end. So, I was employed by LVNet, you know, I was getting tired of that. And, it's like, let's see, 9/11 happened. I was being more of a pirate host at this point. We're a zero-day dropper for piracy and whatnot. So I was working with groups like Razor 911. I was working with AVAC. I think her name was Stacy, if I remember. It's been such a long time. Somebody else I also met from Maps and Games on Delnet at the time. But yeah, Razor 911, up until Operation Falcon Air dropped in 2002. That is when I actually lost a lot of O-Day access even to wares and stuff like that. And I still had access to certain private areas. You know, I probably pissed them off though, because once I got sick of cancer, I stop talking to people and stop responding. People wanted their hard drives back, and I'm like, don't have them anymore. Alright, so moving on. Meet the other hackers that I've met at Las Vegas Bound Ad, huh? Let's go with Trickster. Basically, CJ Sattler, he's the owner of LV.net. But he's also the person I hacked too, so he's a lazy admin. He always has been. Not a really good network admin either. But if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have dug into what he was doing with Wardriving. He got those new equipment from LANwaves. He was trying to do wireless internet back in 2002. And so he invited me with his friends to go Wardriving with some Yaggies and go around neighborhoods and basically take over their Wi-Fi networks because they were wide open. They had no security. So we get to vandalize a bunch of Wi-Fi networks in the neighborhood, which we thought was funny. But after that, it was like, oh, you know what? That's cool. And, but then I was like, I got to start playing around with a little bit of back in the early encryptions too back then. A couple of years later, but I didn't have access to laptops and whatnot because nobody would give me any or let me have any. I couldn't afford nothing back then. I was working for money for free, and this is like 2 years into it now of being paid with a credit card that I'm very unsure if I'm gonna eat tonight or not. Kind of shit. So. But yeah, he had his moments, so he did. Next. Wish I had like a clicker. Another one I met was in 2002. Was Mr. Email. He just recently passed away, which is very sad. He's really cool, very inspiration for, he's a hacker for sure, and he is known for major spamming back in the day, but this guy is really elite. He was really cool. He was awesome. He's a gearhead, but he also was very privacy. Is it privacy? He was extremely pro privacy and pro freedom. So. Yeah, from what I gathered from him, he was Marty's childhood friend, which ended soon as he became a part of the FBI raid. He showed up like the same moment as I did, and we were both going, what the fuck? And we both, as soon as the FBI came in, we were the only two that stayed right there as they rolled in and dropped to the ground, as they said. Because we didn't know what the fuck was going on. And he's already freaking out because, you know, he's feeling privacy related and he lost freedom and never wanted his fingerprints touched by the FBI. But what was really cool is he was one of the very few people that actually came to visit me every other day at the hospital when I was sick of cancer. He really tried to really help me out when I needed help. He was like a really good friend. We kind of like treated each other like family. So it was really sad to hear him passing on 1/5/2024. He stopped contact with Marty since then. Me and him have been friends since then, so basically he lost Marty as a friend, but he gained me as a brother. He's my brother. I'm another mother. And yeah, he knew that I was doing what I was going, so. Let's see here. Before I got sick, I discovered an exploit with Windows networking, when we were deciding to make an spam tool out of it and a fix for it at the same time. Then I got sick, I couldn't finish writing it, and probably could have made a little bit of money from that, because that's how he basically puts it down, is like, you find something, you jump on it really quick, and you make it out there before anybody else does. And that's kind of funny, though, because I was doing that, I wasn't trying to make money from my exploits that I haven't played Paradise on, but I would use them, but something a little different. And you know, like a hot rod looking 1967 Oldsmobile. Really awesome. Yeah, and Universal Steve, Universal Machine, Automotive Machine here in Vegas. Basically, rebuild the whole motor for him. Here's a 390. I had a 390 in it. I don't remember. But because of him, I got to meet some public people. Person from Neon Sun, I get to his website. It was Lawrence Ryan. He passed away. And sometime like in 2008 after some type of slump. Something that happened. You can technically Google this part of Lawrence Ryan. And something to do with somebody was trying to sober him up, and because of him getting sober, he ended up getting cancer. So that was really weird. Another scary one was a Cristino DiCarlo. Meeting him through, well, basically, this email pointed out who this guy is, but somehow Marty met this guy, and something was really awful about him. I didn't know who he was until this pointed out, saying, this was a mob hacker. I'm like, what? Those actually existed? But, yeah. I'll tell more about that in a moment. But, let's see here. He would actually tell stories on how he used to scrape email addresses on the web, create databases out of them, resell them, or use them to sell spam to those email addresses. And he would actually make a bank from it. He used to say that I used to sit there and do that to make so much money over a weekend. And he was also living in like Newport Beach at the time, and living like living at large over there doing that. But like he had one hell of a talking mouth, man. He was really cool. He was always cool. He always had the coolest stories. Mr. Email, or in other words known as David Steer. Really cool guy. Definitely gonna miss talking to him. I'm just talking like couple days before after Christmas, and just so sad. But yeah, he even knew one of Blizzard's CEOs at the time, and shortly after I was recovering from cancer, he gave me a surprise of the access, with the private beta access to World of Warcraft of 2003. To this day, it's like, that's the greatest thing ever, because my account actually is linked to that private access to beta. I wish there was something else to show with that, but there's nothing. But yeah, that's World of Warcraft. He got me into that because, you know, gaming. It's just really funny. Let's see. Alright, let's move on to the next one. Before I start crying in this one. Alright, so here's my list of a couple of things that came and gone that I can remember right now. Meeting Carlo. Let me read what he technically have done. Basically, what higher, what got. Oh, what was it? Like, try to explain it, but I'll also bring it over here. Worker actually gets prison time. So I just came out of prison in 2004 and somehow got involved with Marty. His name is Cristiano DiCarlo. Indicted with that. Because they were hacking basically telecom system. But they were doing it just so they can. What was it? What did they do again? Reputed torture expert from Florida sentenced 3.5 years. Because he would take over all alcohol entertainment industry. In Las Vegas for extortion. This was one of the guys. Plea deal. Had to look up half these people. I think they all died by 2010. Last week's alcohol. And then there was something because whatever this was happening at the same time is called this the person that they attacked for that extortion for the before that they were somehow Mitnick's company knew that came in and basically helped them secure their network from that point moving forward. And that's actually in Mitnick's latest story, Ghost in the Wires. And that's really funny how this is all related. And I got to meet DiCarlo, a very weird guy. Arrogant, weird, arrogant, weird, and remember how I'm sitting, you know, I don't read the news, I don't watch the news, I don't shit about the news, because, you know, I'm not left or right, I don't care about the politics, all I want to know is the weather outside, and make sure there's no wars happening outside my door, and that I don't care what happens out in the freaking streetways in Vegas. Whatever's happening. This, I wasn't following the news then. I was too busy taking over other networks. All this dude was like taking over our freaking cell phone system. Entertainment industry. That's like, I know there's some other story that actually leads more into it, but I don't know. It's just like names like Joshua Snellings, that sounds so familiar. So it's like, I'm pretty sure I've met a few of these guys. I know I met DiCarlo because it's hard to forget that person. That's really weird. Scary times. I did get to meet, another thing I got to meet, a group called Indecline. Back then there was also, through Indecline, they were doing bum fights, which was kind of harsh, but, you know, they're Indecline, they're activists, or hacktivists, I don't know what they really call themselves, but they go around, they technically do a lot of deface, but they're doing activists. They are activists with using their defacing. So they're not defacing like they're saying they're a gang or anything. They're just defacing the show. What's really happening kind of thing. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to get at. And there's people who actually truly hate Marty that I've met through Marty while I was working at LVNet. Got Elon Servan, who was a plumber. Marty fucked him over. Somehow I befriended him, but he was more very, very weird and controlling guy. I guess all he ever needed was a hug, that is. Very weird guy. Very, very weird. And then you have this, I don't know, I think a lot of people like, he's actually angered and they'll never really work for him again. Or deal with him again. Or anything like that. Can't think of names off the top of my head, but I know I met a lot of people like that. Alright, so there's a lot of people that come and go. Yeah, so the conclusion and the end. So my conclusion is, you know, I'm like rethinking, you know, the whole situation with Marty. And you know, back then he had ties with the mob. I'm like, how does he meet people like Carlo, who just barely got out of prison? All of a sudden he's hanging around Marty. It looked like they're about ready to maybe server rent and stuff like that. Stuff like, it almost sounds like Marty was selling him on something, and I don't know, it's just, it's so many speculations right there. Didn't put my finger on it, but it sounds too good right there to really say it can't be. Because this is really starting to lead it down. I mean, how, you know, it is after the FBI raid and all that, so it's like, don't know. In that FBI raid, you know, that's what, that was fucked. And, you know, that's a lot of Goombas that were in there, you know, they were mob-looking people. You know, like you would see in the Sopranos kind of thing, you know, real-life Sopranos people just marching around and being really bossy and asshole-y and fucking get the fuck out of my face kind of shit. Bad people, and like, oh, dude. And, yeah. Stuff I never wanted to be around. I never liked it. I never wanted to be a part of them. I never even dreamed to be around any of them kind of people. Nor do I ever wanted to be a part of them. I want nothing to do with that, any of that. Ever. I mean, one of my dreams was becoming, going into the Air Force and flying planes. I'd rather fly planes because I like science and aerodynamics and aeroscience and, you know, like, yeah, I never wanted to become a mobster or anything like that or working with those kind of people. I never wanted to be anywhere around it. I went to LV.net because I wanted to learn and become a part of a computer-related job that I can excel in, grow with. Either I find new opportunities from it that's actually legit, or I grow with the company until I become the company, you know, kind of thing. But that never happened in any way. I became more of a, I guess, a pawn for Marty. So, in many ways, I've made the biggest mistake by hacking his network. He has technically robbed 10 years of my life. But, you know, it's my trilogy. What else can I say? And that's that. That's it. And what else is there? I think that's it. Completely it. Okay. So that is, I'm going to leave that with you. My next one's going to be Act Like a back like a genius. Black horse coming. Have a good one. Bye.